On this week's show, Empowering Construction Careers with Christy Palutik from BuilderFacts. In this week's news, a new McKinsey report and more.
Construction is the world's oldest industry, but spends the least amount of money on innovation. When we realized people outside the construction industry didn't typically associate construction with technology like virtual reality, apps, and robotics, we started the ConTech Crew. Each week, we bring our listeners the latest in ConTech news and interview the minds behind the technological innovations changing the way we build. So strap in, enjoy the ride, and geek out. It's ConTech Crew time.
All right, Nathan Wood, how we doing, buddy?
Oh man, just living the dream down here. It's beautiful weather. It's cooled down, so we're ready to have you down here.
Well, you know, a little thing. I'll be passing through this evening. Time to get back out on the road. It's we're getting into conference season, so I'm getting my laps. I'm getting going, man. It's that time of year again. Christy, thank you for sitting down with us and joining us today. How are you?
I'm doing great. Jeff, Nathan, thanks so much for having me here. Good to be a part of it.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's great to have you. To everybody listening in, hey, don't forget that we are back on YouTube. Go ahead and subscribe. Hit the like button so you can get not just the full length, but the snippets and snippets that are only out for YouTube. So check it out. All right. So, Christy, tell me a little bit about your journey into construction, and you have a really interesting path that we don't see a lot in the construction industry. So I'm really excited to have you sit down and kind of go through it.
Yeah, absolutely. So let me start by saying, I never thought I'd be in construction at all. I am third generation construction. My grandfather worked from the, you know, as eighth grade education, worked as a superintendent building. My dad, thank you to my grandfather, lied about his age when he was 16, got into construction, worked for 30 years. I never thought it would be an industry I would get into until I did. And I told people right when I joined the industry, I felt like I found my people. As cheesy as that sounds, it also is true. There's an authenticity and a realness to the people in this industry that I have yet to find anywhere else that I truly appreciate. So yeah, wandered on into the industry a little bit, kind of through the back door. Came up through the people side of the business for the most part, working for Kiewit and working for Skanska, supporting lots of different business units and lots of different folks. Few years back, nothing like a pandemic to jump into the deep end with a consulting business. And so with Alta Consulting, got to work with construction leaders across the industry to improve the employee experience, which is how I found my way connected with BuilderFacts, early stage startup to help support the craft workforce and help them be the professionals that they are in the industry we work in.
So let's take this all the way back. So when you say the people side of things, it gets a little lost, I think, on the listeners as to what that means, because there are so many people. This is not your classic people side, like I'm a field superintendent or, you know, I'm a, you know, a trainer. What did the people side of the business mean when you joined Kiewit?
Yeah, great question. Kiewit didn't know how to spell HR when I joined them. And so it's about a year in where they figured it out. And so it really was in the HR side. But here's why I say the people side of the business is because I'm not your typical HR person. And in construction, there's such a stigma with HR. I don't love dealing with benefits. I don't love dealing with compliance or employee relations. For me, I got into HR because it seemed like the fastest way to positively impact the business. How can we do good things for the folks, the men and women on their tools that are working hard out in the field? How do we support them better and for the business? And to me, HR seemed to be that path to get me there.
Okay, so there had to be early on like a couple of, wait, what are we doing here? Like, what were some of the early wins in surprises that you're like, wait, you don't do that? We don't do that? What were some of those early ahas for you?
oh God, just sitting down and having real conversations with folks, right? Here, you're doing well here. You're sucking there. We need to get you to improve here so we can get you to grow in your career. We're still not awesome at having some of those conversations with folks. But just the fact that that wasn't really happening. It was, you know, when I got into this industry 20 years ago, there was still very much a no news is good news when it came to kind of that people management side of things. And it's like, no, we've got to sit down and have some real conversations about what you're doing well, where you need to improve, and what we can do to help you get to that next level, whatever that next level looks like.
So let's dig in for a second on what are kind of the workflows within BuilderFacts that you're tackling first, because I love this sort of like bottom up approach. But yeah, like where have you found the most traction?
Yeah. So with BuilderFacts, we're really starting at the basic level. So we're starting with credential management. We know that folks are showing up on job sites with stacks of cards, whether it's OSHA 30 or rigging certifications or all of these things, right? The proverbial manila folder that, you know, the craft person shows up with. There is always a card that gets lost in a truck or left at the house or what have you. So BuilderFacts, we're really just starting with giving the craft workforce a place to digitally store those in an online wallet, in an app. And from there, okay, let's look at how do we get ahead of training, right? Tracking expiration dates. Going back to some of this stuff that I was talking about is, what is it going to take to help you get to that next level? And how do we get you there? And start getting ahead of that. Because particularly for the craft in this industry, not everywhere, but in many places, the craft workforce is treated as a disposable asset that are hired for a project, kicked out at the end, moved on. That's not the case everywhere. But let's start treating them like professionals, start building their resume, start giving them a way to track and own that data and information that right now they don't really have access to. It's all stored by companies or unions or training providers, what have you. Let's give it to them.
Yeah, it's sort of all over the place at the moment. It's interesting too, because you know we're always looking for parallels to draw. And it's like everything I get now from my, you know, if you get Global Entry, if you get a new driver's license, they all come with apps now to control that. And I was sitting there thinking like, okay, cool. I have a digital wallet and I have to remember where everything is. Wouldn't it be nice if I just had like one digital wallet? Although Apple Wallet kind of does that. It, you know, it has to be enabled for Apple Wallet, et cetera. And it's not specific to the things. It's not actually constantly connected to what I'm doing. So it's cool to see that it hitting our industry. And all those apps are pretty new that we're seeing out there. So it's a perfect timing. We're not behind on this one necessarily.
Well let's follow that analogy, because my thought was, I was just recently at the pharmacy at Safeway. And again, I can walk in without a wallet. I can show on my app my, you know, Colorado State ID that's got some like hologram thing that moves around, so you know it's, you know, a real deal thing. And I can pay with my Apple Pay and I can walk out. But yeah, it's that two-way street of I can send digitally. So like BuilderFacts is sending the stuff, but what's the receiving end of it? Like are there any like integrations where like a Procore stuff is like receiving your information, or yeah, like how is that being shared now that you're creating it, and what's been the reception to it?
Yeah, great question. Right now, our users are able to send their credentials. Either they can show it right on their phone, just like you were talking about. You can also send it with an email, just a PDF attachment. So let's say you've got, you know, Sally ready to come to work. Hey, Sally, send us all your credentials before you showed up. No problem, right? Email that off ahead of time. Save that process. We also have the ability with a QR code on the spot. So we know out in the field, crane operators are responsible to make sure the folks rigging their material are certified. That falls on that crane operator's hands. So we're giving them a tool to be able to, hey, rigger, right? Hey, Johnny, I need to lift this. Are you certified? Oh, yeah. Oh, my card's in the truck. Meh. You know, pull the phone, show it, right? Either scan it with the QR code in the moment or do that. Nathan, what you're talking about, integrations with a Procore or a Viewpoint or all of those other systems out there on our radar, we want to be able to, you know, have some of that two-way conversation, because, you know, some companies are doing a pretty good job tracking their certifications. others aren't. Okay. How do we make sure that we're filling our users' wallets, right, with all the credentials they have, but also sharing that back? There's some really great tools out there around workforce planning, workforce management. Great. We want to plug in and get connected to those. And those are on our roadmap to be able to do that, to start to make that piece seamless.
Yeah, it's much, we were talking about this in the pre-show, Christy. It's much like the time card world. I remember the first successful time card apps had nothing. They had no integrations, no nothing. But the most fantastic story I heard was a younger guy on a job site, couldn't believe that he was forced to write things down to submit his time. So he got an app, and the app had a feature that you could just email a PDF of your time as you were doing it. And you could just email it at the end, and it landed on the payrolls, you know, at their desk. And they were like, oh my gosh, a PDF I can read and copy from. This is the greatest thing I've ever seen in my life. Where did you get this? How did you do this? And the kid's like, it's a free app. And they started giving it to everybody and recommending it to him. And then, you know, like you should, it said, hey, there's like all these people with this at blah, 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 .com using our app. Would you like it to, like, would you like us to show you how it could just integrate? Mm-hmm. And that's it. So it's a great path through user-led adoption, yeah, which I think is where, given your history, you are focused, is on the crafts workers. Because it's not just about, and again, this is kind of coming from the pre-call, it's not just about their credential management. You guys have, and you personally, through your history, have more of a vested interest in the crafts workers. And tell me a little bit about more about what you kind of envision here.
Yeah, thank you. So we are starting with just a credential management, which is, you know, our first step into the process. But really what we are building and want is to create and provide a tool to the men and women out in the field to help them, help support their career development. Like I talked about, right? I'm a third generation. My dad, you know, worked for 30 years in the industry, grew through the ranks. My grandfather, eighth grade education, right, on his tools, his entire career leading folks. If I could sit back with either one of them, and admittedly my grandfather's passed, but I'll sit down with my dad and he will start rattling off, I was on this project here and I talked to this person here and his favorite crane operator was so-and-so. Like, he's got all these stories, but he's got to remember them all. He has no way to go through and show, here's all the projects I was on. He's, oh, there was this one, like this tiny one that I was on for just a couple months. And that is what we're working on building with BuilderFax, starting with the credential management, adding in the projects that you've built on, the specific experience, the skills to be able to create that profile, right? That career path that you've had for each individual. And then be able to turn that around for the 18-year-old that takes a welding class in high school that's like, gosh, this seems really cool, but my parents are in finance. I know nothing about welding. They bring out their BuilderFax wallet a couple years down the road and say, hey, what could it be to be a journeyman welder, right? What would that look like? Oh, well, it's going to take about this many years. You're going to need these sorts of credentials. Here's some ideas of projects you could be on or money that you could make, right? And be able to show that back to them in a way that right now it doesn't exist, that's craft focused.
All right, I got to jump in here because I can't help but notice your company's BuilderFax, F-A-X. But really, yep, what you're talking about is facts, F-A-C-T-S, about builders. Is that, yep, was that intentional?
What's the backstory? Everybody's like, are you talking facsimiles? Are you taking us back into the 80s?
Right.
What happened is during our discovery, this last fall, as we were talking with craft folks and IT and HR to really decide, is this something we had? Our founder, Kirk Samuelson, a 45-year industry vet, met with a group of craft out in Boise. And one of the guys in the room was like, so you're building the Carfax of my career? Hook, line, sinker, fish on, BuilderFax of the career.
That makes sense.
You're never going to get
that
away
makes
from
sense.
That.
Because we all remember Carfax.
I know.
The Carfax commercials.
100%. And what Carfax has done a really brilliant job of, if taking, you know, it's the car, right? But taking all of that data and all of that information about that car's history and be able to provide it to you in a trusted report. And so as we take all this data in for each of our builders and be able to provide it in a consistent resume, write a consistent format that's trusted, validated, and becomes an industry standard.
So let's double down on that. You said industry standard, perfect segue, because that the reason that exists is because of VIN numbers, right? VINs, vehicle information number. Don't want to say number twice. Yep. But at any rate, like, is there a need? Is there any existence when it comes to a builder's profile for that level of VIN certification? Or what's out there? Or what's the need?
Right now, we are avoiding the personal identifiable information. Right now in this country, we've got one, social security numbers. And I mean, spoiler alert with some of the news that's coming up, right? It's not exactly the best thing to use. But what we also know is that within our industry, each craft worker has a unique employee ID number with each contractor they work with. So what we're doing in our system is creating a relational database, right? Where you've got, Johnny or Sally, each craft worker is tied in with these different numbers to be able to create that web of trust without using a social security number and without creating that risk of opening that up. Really, the only personal information we're collecting right now is name and an email address. That's it.
I'm wondering, and then too, you could probably do the same thing when you're talking about your certifications. Those are relationally held and you can, and usually those groups want that information consumable. Mm-hmm. Usually. I say usually. There's always an exception somewhere.
Sure.
So it's sort of the same thing. Like if I have my, if I'm a journeyman welder and I've got, certain certifications along the way, then depending on where I got trained, you can get that info.
Exactly. Yeah.
And the more projects you've been certified on, that kind of like that the better your profile looks, or I don't know if you guys have like a verified, kind of symbol or something when it's on multiple projects and they can see that and gain more trust from it.
Yeah, what we have in the background, we haven't quite flipped the switch on it yet, but we have in the background is that verification piece, because we know folks are showing up to a job site, handing over the card, someone's looking at it and saying, yes, that's legit, or taking the card, looking in the number online, right? In like the crane operator system or an OSHA 30 system or OSHA system, right? To validate that. So what we're building in is the ability to create that vehicle for the validations where, I can scan a picture, right, of my card. I can upload the data, right? It's in there, but it's unvalidated or unverified. And then be able to build in, hey, I got this credential from this training provider over here, but DPR certified it, right? We're good. And then we're actually working with training providers as well to issue credentials directly through the system. So it comes through from that training partner and shows up as that verified in the system and be able to report and show on that.
That's cool. It's like a different version of a two-factor authentication sort of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, we want it to be trusted credentials and trusted information, and we're not going to be doing that verifications or validations ourselves, right? But we want to create that vehicle within the ecosystem to be able to make that happen.
Well, yeah, that's that beautiful CDX right there is that, and it speeds up the process and it makes it stronger. That crane operator is taking a lot of risk that everybody is truly saying they are, and that, the card they presented or, also this is another one, like I have to put my IT hat on. Social engineering's pretty easy. I'm about to do a pick and I got a lot of things going on. I'm in a very high tense situation. I can use that as it's right there. It's right. We got to do and all of a sudden, but I'm taking a huge risk.
Yeah.
So instead, I love the idea of here's my QR code and it's doing a check in the background. It's like, yep, that's that person. You're good to go and keep the flow going. Plus, you don't have somebody who went back in the back and was like, is that a zero or an O? Oh, gosh, I don't know. That is, and by the way, like, look, we all know trucks are not like the cleanest places and job sites are not the cleanest places. And not everybody is printing out a high quality level card. So, you know, it gets shoved in and out of a wallet a few times, social security card, right? Mm-hmm. Can't read half the numbers anyway anymore.
No. Well, and we've got, Jeff, I couldn't quite tell, but I think you've got the coffee cup you're drinking of is from a tool manufacturer. So, yep. So,
yes, it is.
Many tool manufacturers, like the one that, you know, you're drinking their coffee cup from, are out providing very specific tool trainings on job sites. What's often happening is those folks are entering in that information into Excel spreadsheet, hand printing cards themselves and handing them out like Oprah, right? How time consuming is that for them as opposed to, right? Right now we've got our Builder Fax wallet. We're working on our admin workbench where the tool manufacturers, the contractors, the training providers, all the things can have, understand their craft workforce, what credentials do they have, and be able to issue it directly through there to gain insights into that information that they don't have and make that whole process a lot easier as well. And it puts it directly into that wall, that person's hand.
Yeah. And first access and then insights, right? Like even having the credentialing is how you get access to even turn on the tool itself, or even back to the crane example, that crane doesn't work until that QR code gets scanned. Ooh. And it's way easier to enter that QR code than it is to fat finger it in manually, right? So they're more incentivized to go to the digital option. And so, yeah, we're creating that ecosystem of adoption by mm-hmm. thinking about the workforce user experience.
Yep. Exactly.
If only everybody could do that.
I know, right?
It well, sounds so easy.
Let's be honest here, right?
When you say it that way.
We're not talking rocket science. Having been in the industry as long as I have and spending times doing this sort of thing on job sites, Jeff, going back to the time card example, I don't know how many hand paper time cards I have taken, needed to navigate and punch in, right? To be able to take this information and just make it easier, right? Just make the experience a little bit easier for the folks working on the field. Treat them like the professionals that they are. Avoid the duplicate trainings and all that sort of stuff. Give organizations better access to data and being able to, you know, give them the insights into the workforce that they have. Plan ahead.
Are you trying to reach the innovators and decision makers in construction technology? Then look no further than sponsoring the ConTech crew. That's right, we're taking new advertisers. Email us at advertising@theconTechcrew.com to learn more.
Right.
Oh, all right, you hit me with two things there. And so now I don't even know where I want to take you.
Because well,
there's two separate things here. The first one is I'm going to go back and it's kind of cool because you were at Kiewit and this person, Connor Christensen, was at Kiewit. Connor Christensen, and he's at Kiewit now. And what he talked about when it came to horizontal construction was how ready they are as an industry for digitization because of how many things they collect already and how much data they have to know. And it's just like, wow, you're so prepared. The industry, for once, we're really prepared for this. Right. Like we have this, the problem is it's just like everywhere. We have it in all these little digital pockets. Mm-hmm. So we have an opportunity to unlock it. Did you see that as part of this process of like, wow, this is a gold mine of growth for people, for the industry itself?
Mm-hmm. I think so. So Kirk Samuelson, our founder, like I said, industry veteran, worked at Kiewit as well. That's where our paths crossed originally years ago. And he was trying to do something for the craft career development while he was there. And really the conversation was like, this is an industry problem, not an organizational problem. And so now that we're on the outside of, you know, outside of a organization specific, we can start to provide that digitalization, to provide that support to the industry in a palatable sort of way, right? In a digestible sort of a format versus one organization trying to solve this or trying to figure it out for their people that only silos the data, being able to be on that outside where, I mean, it's a little cheesy, but a rising tide lifts all ships, right? Being able to help support the industry as a whole.
Well, and the term I learned when out in California was matchmaker, this matchmaker strategy that, you know, Uber and Airbnb and all these guys that are, you know, have this duality of riders and drivers and hosts and guests. And even in your situation, it's, you know, those providing credentialing and those receiving credentialing. And there's probably a lot of other pockets where you can create that. But it's, again, only when we can really understand the motivations for both sides to want to do something differently than the way they've always done it. Because if we're not addressing that in the first place, like, don't develop anything, right? Like, we really have to understand the value prop. And it seems like, yeah, with the credentialing, you're really onto something.
Thank you. And we're not tech people, right? We're not like out of Silicon Valley. This is, you know, I've learned more about software development in the last year than I have ever known in my entire life. We come from the industry. It's understanding the problem. And then it's finding the tech people to go build what we think the industry needs and help support them.
Well, and that's the, in my opinion, personally, that's the better path, right? That's the way to go down it. So the second thing that you made me think of was we were having this discussion and truth and transparency. I was playing board games with my daughter this weekend and played the game of life and had a realization that, yes, the game was built in the 1970s or something of that sort. And it really puts a the non-college career, the trade worker path as a secondary path. And what I see in this, instead of, you know, kind of looking at the negative, let's look at the positive. This is an opportunity to professionalize the process of growing a career as a craft worker, as a trade person. Mm-hmm. And so I'm interested in just how that lands with you, given your history of, you know, years of doing HR and from that growth perspective and helping those people. And then landing into our tech world of how you apply that then.
Yeah. Truth or transparency, Jeff? 4 years I fell under that norm of thou shalt go to college. I had those same conversations with my college age kid, right? And fell into that. And I think COVID did a lot of things for this country, right? And for this world. But I think what came out of that were some really great, loud voices that were being heard when it came to construction being essential to, hey, what is happening with, you know, college loan systems? And you think about what Mike Rowe has done for this industry and raising this. And I've been watching Dirty Jobs since before I can remember, right? But still, it raised and elevated that up. And I think for many, myself included, opened some of the eyes to, hold on, this can truly be a professional career if we start treating these folks like professionals and not like, you know, assets that we can hire here and chuck there and not worry about. Let's start treating them like professionals, giving them the tools that they need to be successful, give them the ability to manage their own career in ways that they can't do now to be able to support them. And I think that life should probably be rewritten again, at least the game. Because I think that there are multiple paths to be really successful, and we limit ourselves as a society, as a culture, when we start to focus and put too much light on one path or another.
All right, this is going to blow your guys' mind. I just looked this up. Milton Bradley invented the game of life in the year 1860.
Seriously? Wow. It was 100 years before I thought it came out.
And it kind of looks similar to what it looks like today. Like, okay. It's all like made out of wood or something. But yeah, it is wild. Thanks, Google.
Well, you could tell too that we didn't prep this then, because I was 110 years old. I'm here
fact-checking on the fly. And also, Chrissy, if you haven't watched Mike Rowe's TED Talk from like 2009, I mean, that's where that really turned my head. I'm like, oh, Mike Rowe gets it. Like, this guy's a philosopher. Like, he is like way beyond what you see in Dirty Jobs. And like, you can see it in his, you know, discussions on Procore stage and other things like that. But he's an awesome person to follow, doing great things for the industry.
Oh, 100%. What he's doing with MicroWorks. And I had the opportunity to see him talk at a conference last year, right? I'm a little, He is doing some
fanboys.
Wonderful.
By the way,
we're all here, just saying.
You've now shared a stage with him, just so you know.
Yeah.
Because Mike Rowe was on this podcast.
That's right.
That is awesome.
Yes. You can go way back.
Way back. It was at Con Expo, ConAg in about 2017, I think. Yeah. I'd have to look back. I'm very sad. I was not the interviewer. I was not there for it. So I did not get to do that. But you are now sharing the stage with it. So
And
Mike, you ever want to come back, buddy? You have an open invitation to come on back. and just sit down with me. No.
But if you need a guest interviewer for that, you just let me know. I'm happy to fill it.
That's probably the only one I won't have to like send a text message to everybody who's free.
Yeah, like who wants to join with Mike Rowe next week? You get a flood of phone calls immediately.
Yeah, but we digress because you hit on something that I'm going to play around with this a little bit again because we didn't talk about this ahead of time, but this is where it's taking me is this professionalizing the career, providing career path. You mentioned all the way at the beginning, the 17-year-old that took a course that, you know, learned how to weld and thought, hey, I'm going through college. I'm going through, you know, community college. I'm going through a journey, you know, some sort of apprenticeship, maybe a gap year. Hey, I got this app and I got this thing. And it's like, hey, here's opportunities. Hey, would you like to think about this? And then, you know, as that career grows, one of the other things here is, like it or not, everybody listening, the trade worker is going to have the advantage in the future. You will be clamoring for them far more than they will be clamoring for you. So you're going to need access to show off yourselves, and they are going to have opportunity. So I see this as, you know, spinning into like our own version of Indeed or whatever it might be, where you can feed your profile in there. You can pick companies. Like, I'd love to have the business facts instead of the car facts. And like, who do I want to go to work for? Mm-hmm. How many stars does this company have? Mm-hmm. How many stars does this person have?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Let's be honest. When it comes down to it, the best crews that deliver because of the team.
Absolutely.
And the leadership and the team structure. And sometimes it's a actual lack of leadership. It's an ability to be fluid with leadership and just trust. So I kind of see this as an opportunity for in that mode of professionalization, but then a level of control over your own career path, which we have not given. How about if you just tell somebody who's been a licensed electrician and a master electrician for X amount of time, like, have you ever thought about this? Here's a course in this that you can take online, and it's going to provide you these opportunities.
There, through some of the conversations we had here this last fall, there are these two craft individuals that were working for a large general contractor and had worked for them for 5 or 6 years. Moved to different states, to different projects, and we ran into them on a large highway project in Arizona. And they're like, you know what? If we could just track the credentials and prove that I'd taken this orientation before, I have sat through the same orientation on 5 times in 5 years on 5 different projects, all for the same company. In that same room was an HR person, her head hanging, shaking, right? Holding her head. Because these individuals, right? Craft workers have been moved with the company, right? Obviously, the company cares about them to move them, to continue to hire them, to continue them on board. But not quite enough to track that they had done their orientation and to keep that data going from one place to the next. So again, let's professionalize these folks, give them the tools that they need, give that company what they need to be able to better track it. So when those folks show up, say, awesome, you're done it, new site, here's the site-specific safety. Okay, now they'll go get out there and get to work. We're going to train up these other rookies on how we do business at this company.
Yeah, right? And that example is such a double whammy because it's like not only is it wasting their valuable time, but it's also like it's just killing their own morale, right? Where they're just like, why do I have to be going through this multiple times when I could be out there working? Like they're just as frustrated as anybody else. And it's just a lose-lose situation. So yeah, which is why matchmaking, you know, creating a win-win. So that's a great example.
Yeah.
Well, but the reason we do it and the reason we go, I'm just going to make you do it again is risk. This is a risky business. And again, it is pretty easy to engineer my way through that risk and then create way more risk in the field. So we're going to again, this goes to our productivity, right? We're going to duplicate our efforts to make sure we decrease our risk, and we're 100% sure we've decreased our risk. So you can de-risk that by making that possible. And I can actually see this flipped, because it's great that you talked about being in Arizona, because this is something I learned when I was in Arizona with the American Society of Concrete Contractors a long, long time ago, was there are a number of people who move from city to city. Mm-hmm. But in Arizona, there are a lot of concrete tradespeople that don't move. They actually move from company to company. Mm-hmm. And that's why the companies that do the majority of business in the state of Arizona share their training. They share their safety practices. They've pretty much created like the exact same, because what they want is any worker on any of their jobs or anybody else's jobs to be safe and have the same level of safety training. Because safety is one of those things we're wide open book on. We want everybody to be safe. So again, now that worker can be like, yep, I've been through level one, level two. I've had my refresher because it's been a year. It's been 2 years. Great. I can put you to work. And I de-risked the job. And to Nathan's point, I kept the morale. And again, I've made ubiquitous this idea of a certification and an opportunity to work. Hey, and I can put out someday over BuilderFacts, hey, need level 3 certified concrete contractors in, you know, the Phoenix area. By the way, paying a $10,000 signing bonus if you can start within X amount of days. Mm-hmm. Here we go.
All right, Chris, you can take this one home with you and use it how you want. But I wrote this down as you're saying that, Jeff. Fear drives waste. Trust drives efficiency.
Oh, say that one more time, Nathan.
Fear drives waste. Mm. Trust drives efficiency.
Absolutely. Yes. And we don't, right now, what's so frustrating, we're so fearful in this industry because it's risky, right? Like it can be dangerous. So with this has come this fear, not only of someone getting hurt, but the fear of liability or risk, or it's, you know, what could happen. And we drive all of these, you know, not great behaviors as a result of it, which just, oh God, it kills people a little bit, right? I mean, not really, it's an emotional just strain, but oh my good gravy, right? It just becomes exhausting. And to try to navigate that when most folks in this industry just want to go build cool stuff, right? They want to be a part of an awesome team, go build something really cool, and then go home, tell their family about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And someday want to be able to look back over their career and go, yep, I was on all of this.
Yeah.
And I built those and I did this. And those same companies, they do want to reduce the risk. They do want to reduce the red tape. But like you said, fear drives us. So I love that statement, Nathan. And trust is going to be the key. But trust but verify. And that's why we need these systems, right? Mm-hmm. It's why we need the change. So, I think we could go on forever. I want to give you an opportunity, Christy, to tell people where to go find out. And, from both sides, the crafts folks, but also the businesses that you're looking for to connect, because I really want to see this grow. I've heard a lot of these pitches over the years. We talked about this and I'm like, wow, finally one that's putting it in the hands of the person who needs it most.
That's what we're hoping for. And that's really the intent, right? It's a bit of giving back to the industry that has served us so well. Sounds so cheesy to say this, but to find out more, go to our website, right? BuilderFacts.com. Our wallet is available for free to download in Apple and Google Play Store. So go check it out right now. We've got tons of information on our website. Connect with me on LinkedIn, follow us on socials, all of the things. I think I've hit on all the party lines on the sales pitch side, but we're out there. Go check us out. It's free. We want feedback. We want insights. We want to build, make sure that we're building this for a tool that folks will use. So give us the feedback. Tell us what you like. Tell us what you don't. We're here for you guys.
Get in early. That's mine. It's a very quick setup. I went through it. I stepped through it. I was taking some notes to throw back at Christy, and it is out there and it's ready to go. So you guys check it out. And with that, you know, we could go on forever, but don't worry. Christy's coming with us. We're going to go to the construction technology news of the week. Back in 2020, I heard about a new software platform called Join. Within minutes of seeing Join, I knew it had the power to revolutionize collaborative project delivery. In fact, I was so sold on Join that I joined the team as its industry evangelist. Many trade shows and podcasts later, Join is now used by 50% of the ENR top 30. Why? Pre-con and ops leaders at DPR, Bolt, McCarthy, Barton Mallow, Clark, and others say that they like Join because it does two big things: collaborative, trackable decision-making, and awesomely simple visuals. Want to learn more about the power of Join? Go to www.join.build/demo to learn about how better gets built. All right, Nathan, what do you got?
All right, I got one, but it's a big one. We're going to spend some time on it. shout out to, speaking of DeWalt and tools, shout out to Benny Balchowski for sharing this article. It was written by a gentleman from Trimble, but is part of a Forbes larger article. So again, very large distribution. Title of it here: Integrated Data Ecosystems Could Transform the Construction Industry. Again, shocker for us. But I think some really good points here today. Again, looking more specifically at like surveying 3D models, you can tell that he's speaking more from the BIM point of view, but also mentions that connectivity with construction management data, with a lot of things we've been talking about here. And so how do we kind of tie the 3D, the design world, the operations, and the construction management world into this sort of hub and spoke ecosystem? So, you know, again, it gets me more and more excited that the things that, again, we've seen in our heads for a decade plus. I know, Chris, you and I have kind of seen the world in a similar light from our different perspectives. But, you know, as we get closer to this, what we're seeing here is that certainly software is not the barrier. You know, they're mentioning many partnerships between Autodesk and Nemetschek and their partnerships with you know, others. And again, we've talked many times about their acquisition of Rivet, now the Trimble App Exchange, and other efforts, again, from a lot of these top partners to be open with data. And I think, you know, really the only thing I would say is missing here that I wish you would have touched on is that this big challenge with overcoming this gray work or digital waste, or, you know, use the insert the buzzword for this waste that we're talking about, is really, you know, building the culture and building the incentives to overcome those barriers. But great words in here. Good to see that this word is getting out and that people are creating awareness, which leads to action.
Yeah, it's a great one, Nathan, because it's kind of focused a little bit around the 3D models, but it's also, you know, big publication and focused on the right thing, right? The ISO standards, the ability and need for data standards, the ability and need for interoperability to move the information. And you sort of hit on it there too, is that it's a it's not just about the models, it's about the tools. You know, so as much as what Christy and the team are doing is trying to help the craftsperson, there is a lot of need, especially in our current world, where tools need to talk back to the systems themselves to certify that the work has been done the way it says it's been done. And that's a very manual process right now. And it's causing all sorts of inefficiencies that don't need to be there, because again, we have a fear and a risk, and we're going back to the lowest way to deal with it. So there's an opportunity here for integrated tool suppliers like DeWalt and others to get involved in the larger contracting systems, larger project management, closeout solutions, other things. But I think this is interesting because I just came from the AGC IT forum, and we were in a discussion with the CEO of Bluebeam, Usman, about kind of AI and governance. And there's a lot coming out. I mean, Europe's got already a lot of controls around GDPR. They are the ones who created the ISO 9360 standards, right? They're now have kind of a bigger piece on AI, right? So we're seeing a level of governance that we're going to have to get involved in. That governance gives us structure to move forward. So what I like about the ecosystems and the things they're doing is they're creating a structure in which people can walk to run. Yep. You know, you can crawl, walk, run quickly in that type of situation. So I'm interested, Christy, as you think about a data system, how you guys look at, or at least your experience looks at these, you know, the connected or the currently the lack of connected systems.
I think that to even back up a second, construction gets a terrible reputation of not being tech forward, which admittedly just drives me a little batty because the amount of technology that we have in our industry and the data that we generate is amazing. And I think if folks actually outside the industry took a look in, they would be surprised with how much we have. But my experience has been is that so much of that data is siloed in the organization that it comes from or wherever it's being generated without that interconnectivity. And so, which is just driving me nuts. Someone told me once about swivel chair data entry, which is really two disconnected systems and it's the user swiveling their chair to connect them. I'm like, oh yeah, that's another waste of time. And so it's a manual duplicate entry, right? Yeah. Only cause for error. And so I think that this industry needs to get more of that connectivity across those lens to be able to leverage the data, to be able to take it and do something with it. That is only as good as what you can do to drive action. And so when we've actually built BuilderFacts, we built it entirely from a tech perspective to connect with other systems. It's with the 100% intent to connect it, like we were talking earlier, to some of those major systems out there. That's where you get the bang for the buck.
Because that, before I forget, and I'll throw this back at you, Christy, because one of the companies they did mention was Caterpillar. You know, again, mm-hmm. huge equipment provider about, you know, that sure. provides a ton of data that, again, could be more transparent. And again, what is that relationship between someone's credential profile and their use of a certain equipment and its own operational efficiency? And we get into that whole barrier of like, how much do you want to share? How am I being measured? Changes my acceptance to be measured in the first place. But at least you're approaching that, right? Because I could see a world where that solves all kinds of manual entry problems of how much work got done that goes into your pay app, how much time you spent, which goes into timesheets, all the credentialing and other, you know, safety checks that we can, you know, bring into one interface for that worker. But yeah, like that takes a lot of conversations. So yeah, hopefully if they're not already happening, we can maybe, you know, push those along as CPC or other organizations that can help bring this together.
Yeah. And how do you, I mean, bring that together to drive efficiencies, which I think is going to be a topic we're going to bring up as well. But how do we drive the efficiencies, whether it's, you know, really just-in-time training to the right folks, not rather than like peanut butter across an organization? How do you, so many opportunities. And I start to nerd out a little bit on the data side. And so I'll try to keep that a little bit in check. But
right. I have more thoughts, but they're probably better suited for Jeff's first article because it's a doozy. So I'll kick it over.
I'm going to just keep us going, actually, because, well, if you didn't know, McKinsey came out with another report. Delivering on construction productivity is no longer optional. Now, I'm pretty open about my belief system when it comes to some of this stuff and some of what McKinsey's putting out there, et cetera. However, what I will agree with right off the top is it's no longer optional that we get more efficient in the way that we're building. Now, I do highly disagree with a lot of the facts that come out of this because I believe, let's be honest, part of this is it's a marketing job, right? We have to know we're bad to want to fix ourselves. And well, I'm pretty sure if you read the article and call McKinsey, they'll come help you. So that's part of it. Right? Truth and transparency, probably going to get me canceled at some point, but that's okay. Also, you know, you're a data nerd, Christy. This is a lot of data from a lot of disparate areas and it's being lumped into and we're being, you know, focused on this overall kicking us while we're down. And that's what's been happening on every stage. And years ago, I realized, well, we had to slap the industry over the head a little bit in the beginning, like you got to wake up. But once you do that, like training for negative reasons in any part of your life does not help you. at some point you have to shift to the positive and how it's helping and why it's going to help and how you can support and showing the areas of improvement and why they've improved. And those are the things that you hang on to. The old, you know, if I'm carrying around a hot coal and wondering why my hands are burning, well, it's time to put the hot coal down. Right. And that's what we're doing with this, giving CEOs, giving executives all of this negative press, giving Silicon Valley all of this negative press so they can come in and beat us over the head with us and teach us how to do it right. It's like, that's not the case. And in fact, look at, I was just looking at Ballmer's new stadium with the visual board that they're using. That's like, it was like $100 million itself. Somebody had to build that. It sits in the middle of the new arena for the LA Clippers. It's going to be at LA 28. And you're looking at this like, holy cow. Okay, that is not the same as what we used to build when you put a board up somewhere with a TV screen on it. Okay, what we build is far more advanced. So you can't just go apples to apples on our productivity, on the way that we build. Do we have lots of areas? Yes. Do we have an incredible labor cliff coming? Yes. Now, they want to look at this, that, or the other. I want to look at planning, right? Like, hey, it's time to change the way we build and get the master builders back to the table. The trades are building more and more and are more advanced. And we are, through our contracts, our methods of delivery, we're still keeping them at bay. We're not allowing innovation in materials, innovation in means and methods and constructability to get to the point in which they need to be there. And those are the things we need to be talking about and focusing on. And we need to be leaning into these craftspeople and stop looking them in the face and telling them they suck at what they do, because they don't. And by the way, you drove, you know, to your office, or you're going to fly on a plane to go talk about this. You put this data in a data center somewhere. A crafts person, crafts people, women and men in the field built that so you could do that. So you can beat them over the head with it, but I'd say you'd do a lot better if you showed them how they were doing better and showed them how they could be better through the things that they're doing that work already, and give them the damn credit for how good they really are.
All right, point, counterpoint. So yes and. Well, okay, now I'm going to say but. I will read right here, because as you got off your soapbox, I was reading down below one of the headlines there. Technology uptake has been slow and is mainly focused on control rather than productivity. Is that not just what we were talking about? Is that like, tell me how I measure and I'll tell you how I behave. Like, it's okay to show those numbers that it looks bad. But what they're not doing is they're not emphasizing the root cause analysis on what is causing those things to be bad. I mean, we could spend an entire hour just on that very first graph, the exhibit two, of why manufacturing over the last 20 something years has been at 3% growth, why total economies, again, retail, all the other things where they're trying to create automation and limit people, is at 2%, and construction's, you know, down at 0.4%. And you can see the huge decline since 2020 for very good reason. But again, like, this whole idea of trying to measure gross value added per hour worked across these different industries, like, it's almost like there's a reason why we always excluded agriculture from all those other industries that make construction look bad in the first place. And it's like, we have to really explain that asterisk as to why that number is the way that it is. So I'm okay with them showing that number. What I'm not okay with is them not spending enough time on the root cause analysis of it. Because I think they know why, but that's their secret sauce. And that's what they want you to pay for. And I'm like, no, you should just put that out there. So I don't know. Off my soapbox now, Christy.
My Christy,
here's the soapbox. Step on up to the stage.
Happy to be here. Thanks. I don't know if McKinsey would call this part of a secret sauce, but I think that one element of this, it comes back to our conversation, Jeff, around the game of life, right? And that, you know, the drive towards construction, or sorry, the college career path, is that I think as an industry, we've lost a lot of the builders. The folks that have, like, truly know how to build. I use my grandfather as an example. Eighth grade education, he designed spiral staircases for Seattle Airport right? Years and years ago with eighth grade education. It didn't need the education. It was an understanding of what does it take to go build this, right? And what does it take to go put it together? Because there has been such this push away from the trades, right? Away from that willingness to build, is that you get folks now leading trades folks who have no idea how to build anything, right? That knowledge is gone. There's a senior operations person who's here in the area that I love. I've worked with 40 or 50 year industry guy, is leading an on-site at a high school and building a beautiful high school. But because the company doesn't have superintendents further down in the organization that know how to go build it. And so it's just that knowledge of building it has kind of not fizzled away, but it's diminished, and the importance of it hasn't gone away, which I think is one of the root causes, Jeff, to your point of how do we make it more productive in the field? How do we get better means and methods? Because we're just doing what we've always done in many ways, rather than how do we bring innovation to that from the folks who are on their tools, right? The ones actually doing the things.
That's the key component, is democratizing that information. And I think to what you're, what we've been talking about with you, Christy, is professionalizing that career and realizing how valuable those folks are. And many of them leave our industry a lot earlier than they need to because of the physical nature and the repetitive nature of us just saying, okay, keep going, you know, rinse and repeat. No. We have to change. We need to find those companies that have taken those superintendents and given them a position in which they can train and make other masters out of what they do, how they can get what's in their head. Not just, look, we've talked about this. We got to get a lot of it into the from person to person and person to people. But ultimately, the only way we're going to do this is if we can get it out of people to technology to go to scale, in a way that makes sense, so that we have more of that information. We've made it available, because we're not going to make up for the gap. That is the thing they do have right, is we are headed for a cliff, and our society is growing, our needs are growing, and it's not slowing down, and we got to get better. The opportunity is for us to find ways to do that and to encourage the youth to come this way, but then when they get here, not give them the same old thing.
Yeah, and not make them sit through the same orientation 5 years in a row as they move for a company, as a hypothetical.
Yeah, not expect that they're going to know our standard operating procedure or how to do certain things, and send them to 36 hours of training in 1 week and expect that all to sit there. Look, they watch YouTube, they watch shorts, they do that. You know, they can do a lot of these things in line. Yes. Do we need them to go to their trainings? Do we need them overall safety, yes, overall skills? Yes. But hey, I haven't used this tool in this situation. Oh, there's 2 minutes, 3 minutes. Hey, here's the highlights of what to be careful of, you know, what you need to do. Okay, let's go. Great. We have that there now. And by the way, if we can execute the project, deliver the data, and then analyze the data, learn where we went wrong, learn what works better, continue to double down on what's working, focus our attention on what's not working and what's not changing, and then get better. Because more and more, the reason that manufacturing has had that capability is twofold. Controlled environment. So you're iterating over the exact same process, creating the exact same thing over and over. We never do that in our world. Very rarely. There are instances, but ultimately they're pretty different. So, and we're not in one space doing it. So ours is, it's changing. You know, we've got to put it together. You don't take the shirt in four pieces and then stitch it together at my house and then put it on. No, mm-hmm. It's stitched together. You deliver it to my house in a package and I open it and put it on. We're never going to get there for full buildings. It's not going to work that way, right? So mm-hmm. We're never going to achieve that full manufacturing capability, but we can get a lot closer by doing a lot more offsite and through fabrication and modular, et cetera. But the other one is, we got to stop dinging people for being innovative. I still pay $30, $40 for the shirt. It does not cost that much to make anymore.
Yes.
I guess what? This is a profit business. We are here to make money. So if you ding people and say, okay, it was supposed to cost this much, it went to here, now I'm going to pay you that much. No, that's not how it works. Right? If I can buy it from five different manufacturers, sure, there's a price run there, right? We're going to keep, free market's going to keep us where we need to be. But in the end, we're here to make money.
Which goes back to how much transparency should there be? Because true competitive markets need some level of privacy, right? So drawing that line becomes, yeah, again, a whole other hour we could spend.
Well, coming back, Jeff, a little bit to, you know, when it comes to comparing construction to manufacturing and they're working in a controlled environment, they're able to iterate in a small process. One of the things I think manufacturing has also done really, really well is taken the data, analyzed it, turning it insights, taken action, and then continue to go in a much faster way than construction. Construction, we seem to wait until a project's over. And then we sometimes look at the data and we sometimes glean insights and we sometimes do something from it. But seeing as how buildings take anywhere from what, 18 months to 4.5 years, depending on the size of the project, right? Depending on what we're dealing with. That cycle of learning takes so long. And by the time you're ready to go do something with it or even analyze the data, the team's on to the next thing already. Rather than taking, you know, some of those Kaizen approaches and be able to like stop in the middle and iterate as you go, which some projects teams do within the span of within their project, which is wonderful. And you can start to see some of that growth and some of that productivity advancement. But when you compare construction with manufacturing that does that so fast as just part of its process, yeah, it's just, it's almost not fair, right? To compare the two.
It's not. And that's where you need some sort of, you know, relative denominator factor to go, okay, well, we can only iterate this many times because it takes this long for us to do a project. Y'all do a run of shirts. So you can go back and go, okay, what can we do better? I will give you this though. They also manage their supply chains better than we do.
Yeah. Yep.
And they have diverse supply chain factors and they keep their costs down. So there's a whole tools and techniques to this that are going to be bigger. But you know, hey, if you were tired of the old McKinsey graphs, don't worry, there's new ones. So there'll be a new one coming to you at a conference season near you this year. And if McKinsey ever want to come on and argue with me, feel free. I'm here. Actually, don't hate you, love you. I think it's awesome that we have this opportunity to have the conversation. That's the other thing that they do. So give them credit. They get the conversation going. They've gotten the conversation going over the years. We can argue about how, but at least we're talking.
They got the data, right? Yeah, we need the data. It starts the conversation. So kudos to them for that part, at least.
Yeah. So didn't want it all to be all negative because, you know, I love a good argument, and it's not about winning and it's not about being right. It's about learning more. So this is always fun. And I'm going to end this on I got to do it, right? It's, you've probably already heard, but if you haven't heard, basically every single solitary Social Security number has been released. National Public Data admits hackers stole Social Security numbers in massive breach, reportedly affecting nearly all Americans. So pretty much that single personal identifier that Christy talked about earlier is not singular anymore. It's pretty much known. And the crazy part is it's 2.9 billion and we do not have 2.9 billion people in the United States, but that's how many Social Security numbers we have from our history. And also because you can get a Social Security number for working in the United States to pay Social Security, even though you're not a US citizen. So there's a lot of that out there. This is going to lead to a lot of things. First and foremost, stay on top of your credit. And if you didn't know, there are certain credit agencies you can go, you know, certain services you can buy. However, if you haven't watched the Construction Dorkcast, we kind of covered this, and there are a couple out there that are actually the hackers themselves. So be a little careful. My advice after listening to that and a couple of other people, which, by the way, if you haven't listened to Nick Espinosa talk about it, just go check out Nick. He's always the person you go to the experts. But also, most of your credit cards that you have services that you can get through them. And those are verified services because they are actually in, you know, onto your credit. Two-factor authentication on everything, people. Two-factor. You got to do it. I know it's annoying, but it's not annoying as losing, you know, credit or having something stolen or including your identity. So with that, you know, Nathan, did you see the breach? What are your thoughts?
All I know is I'm all Mac products and they make it really easy to do two-factor authentication. So I'm okay. Cause you know, I have efficiency and security, but, I know that's nobody else in this industry because everybody's PCs. So yeah. I'm just going to stop now.
Yes. Christy, I know it's not the most fun portion. It's not exactly construction specific. However, it's, you know, it's news.
It is. And it's a real big deal that we need to be paying attention to and be mindful of, right? Where we house our data, who we share our data and information with. And while this, you know, just came out today, is news to me today, having the security of what we do with our data. That's why I talked earlier, like, I don't even want to collect any personal identifiable information. People have asked us if we're going to do drug testing. I'm like, I don't want to, right? There's enough systems and enough other spaces in the world where I just don't even want to get into or open up the risk with that, especially with BuilderFox and what we can do so that we're, again, taking care of our people and, you know, supporting them in the best ways that we can.
Yeah. Well, and please go check out the Dorkcast on this. We already released it. It's out there. I actually think this is an opportunity for Sir Tim Berners-Lee or someone with the IP that he has to start doing the pods. If you guys don't know this one, he had the idea. He's truly the inventor of the internet, yeah. The WWW part. And he says if he had to do it all over again, he wouldn't build it the way he did. He would build it so that it was built for each individual to have their own pod of data and connections to it that you can transparently see what they have access to and cut them off at any time. And it's your own little pod. I think that's actually the shift that we need.
Isn't that the concept of Web 3.0? Would you say it's, I mean, again, not to.
It gets a little gray. Because
I hear that term,
yeah.
And that's what I think from when you describe, but you know, whatever.
Yeah, it's about how if we had done this social networking, you know, the basically how a lot of these social networks make money is they are creating the largest data stores on the people that use it. Because, well, again, we'll go back to I think it's Tim Cook. If the product is free, then you're the product.
And that's the example of 2.0. Yeah, like Web 2.0 is like the bastardization of 1.0. And then it's like trying to rebuild in 3.0 of what that's going to look like, pods or otherwise.
Yes. And that would be nice because then I could say, hey, Christy, I want you to see all of these things about my professional career. I don't want you to have access to these things. Here you go. And we're good to go. And we can then control that. And I can say, you know what, Christy, I don't believe in BuilderFax anymore. You're cut off. And I know now, because what happens now is I say, Christy, I want to be, we won't do you. I say, social networking, I want to be a part of you. Here's my data. Now you have it.
Mm-hmm.
GDPR was invented so I could go get it back. But we don't have GDPR in this country. We have GDPR Lite in California. I forget what it's called, but we really don't have that data privacy. So we're in this thing where all these people have this data.
But that's our analogy is I'm the trade contractor that goes onto the job with the GC and I've got my system and I'm going to log into their system. And it's going to pull up this portal saying, which of these things do you want to share with them? Which do you not want to share with them? And it's going to be a different decision on every project because it's going to be based on your level of trust. But it's that sort of an ecosystem. I mean, that is the whole CDX concept, this whole hub and spoke that I think we kind of almost fantasize about. But we're getting much, much closer to that reality is the more we get people kind of all on the same page and swimming in the boat in the same direction, right?
Well, we're going to let Nathan be the mic dropper today because that was the mic drop moment. You found a way to bring it all the way back
self-serving
CDX. But actually, that is critical because if you had a pod and you could say, hey, I'm on this project, I'm going to open up these things, it would be a lot more efficient. So, and a lot less duplicate entry. So, Christy, thank you for joining us today and sticking through the news and going down the crazy rabbit holes with us.
Thank you so much for having me. Truly appreciate it.
Nathan C. Wood, it's always great to have you, brother. It's good to see you.
Oh, Jeff, thanks for keeping us on track, man. This was fun.
Yeah, well, that's my job. Thank you for tuning in today to geek out for our interview with Christy Palutic. To read all our news stories, learn more about our guests, and to listen to this show, visit thecontechcrew.com. This is the Contech Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride, and geek out.